Well, the years start coming and they don't stop 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 coming.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Ain't Ogre Till It's Over. I'm your usual host, Will, and with me is my good buddy, Matt Serafini. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, Will. How's it going? It's good to see you.
Hey, it's great to see you too, Matt. And of course, also with us is my other good buddy, Chris Sheridan. How you doing, Chris?
Just fine, Will. This isn't strange at all.
Now, I'm sure our longtime listeners are very excited about an all-new season of Ain't Ogre Till It's Ogre, even though we originally ended it just over a year ago, promising never again to return.
That's right, Will. I'm not sure what I'm doing with my life anymore.
Me too, Matt.
You guys hear something? Sounds like someone is running up the stairs all mad and confused.
Well, Chris, that might just be a metaphor for how mad and confused our listeners must feel right now, because we've yet to reveal the film we've been watching and discussing once a month for the rest of the year. You do the honors, Matt.
That's right, Will. I'm not sure what I'm doing with my life anymore.
No, Matt, I mean, what movie are you talking about?
Huh? Oh, right. We're discussing Cheaper by the Dozen with Steve Martin, which came out in 2003.
Hey, what the heck are you three up to?
Wait, John Negroni? My co-host from Cinemaholics?
What the f*** are you doing here?
I should be asking you guys that question. As you can see, I'm both mad and confused.
A little sweaty.
And stinky.
Yeah, John, sweaty much?
What are you talking about, Will? You're making jokes that sound like they were written in 2003. Anyway, forget all of that. The three of you aren't even supposed to be doing this right now. It Ain't Ogre Till It's Ogre was canceled by David Zaslav, the CEO of Warner Brothers, over a year ago.
Looks like you're a little out of the loop, John.
Well, aren't you and John podcast friends? Doesn't he even know what's going on?
Well, Matt, you have to remember that people who make podcasts together aren't really friends. And that goes extra for me and John.
Right, makes sense.
Sorry, John, I forgot to tell you what happened. See, you know how David Zaslav is a terrible CEO and is currently burning down Warner Brothers to the ground as we speak?
Of course, we talk about it all the time.
Well then, John, you might also be aware that Zaslav has been threatening to delete the entire show as a tax write-off.
And that, of course, means we can't stop recording the podcast, otherwise no one will know if our podcast is truly Ogre.
Which it is.
Very much so.
Guys, I know Warner Brothers is in dire straits right now, but you don't need to be shilling content for them just to stay afloat. Making more and more episodes of something people aren't asking for just because you're worried your previous achievements will be forgotten? You're not Sony Pictures Entertainment.
Wow, John, that was beautiful.
Wait, everything John just described reminds me of a movie that just came out.
Really? It just made me hungry.
Well, come with me, guys. Let's have a cookout and we'll talk about a movie together for fun, as friends.
Nice try, John. But as podcast friends, naturally.
Now, worth a shot.
Nice. A New York City cookout. And here I am flipping burgers and narrating what I'm doing for some reason.
Matt, calm down. You're pressing the juices out of the patties.
Cool your jets, Chris.
Hey now, Matt. We're podcast friends here. Drink this Pepsi Cola. It'll make you feel better.
Okay, but only if you hand me the can with the label facing me.
All right, guys. Now that we're all feeling a little better and getting some fresh air, how about we just talk about a new movie?
Like Cheaper by the Dozen 2003 with Steve Martin?
No thanks. Everybody knows that when I get invited to an episode of Cinemaholics, which this pretty much seems to be, we're either talking about a Muppets movie, a weird December release movie no one watched, or something vaguely related to Spider-Man.
Or Cheaper by the Dozen 2 with Steve Martin.
Don't forget animated Scooby-Doo movies.
Wait, Matt, did you say something vaguely related to Spider-Man?
I sure did, John. But it's 2024. It's not like there aren't tons of Spider-Man-related movies coming out all the time almost every year for the rest of our lives.
Are you guys high right now? Madam Web just came out.
Oh, that's right. With Dakota Johnson. And Emma Roberts.
Hey, maybe we should just talk about Madam Web. Everyone's been looking forward to it. Like that Catwoman movie from 2004.
Chris, are you okay? You sure don't look happy. Is it because I just smashed the burger with the Nokia phone?
No, I mean, it's not just that. I'm just a little bummed that you guys didn't want to talk about Cheaper by the Dozen with Steve Martin.
Sorry, Chris, but to be honest, I never really wanted to talk about it in the first place.
Yeah, me either.
I'm not sure what I'm doing with my life anymore.
I hear what you guys are saying, but it's just... Well, how do you delete somebody who has never existed?
Chris, I think I see the problem here. You're a little upset because the three of us, wacky teens, are doing our own thing, getting into trouble. Then one day, John, who is older than us, showed up in our lives and forced us to do a movie review for fear of being murdered.
Will's right, Chris. We're not just talking about a movie. We're talking about a web that connects us all.
Like Mark Webb?
Exactly.
So should we just review the movie now? Or?
Well, yeah, first I need to narrate it. And then the opening of Cinemaholics happened.
Welcome once again to Cinemaholics, the major motion podcast, where we talk about the biggest and best films coming to theaters and swinging online. From the San Francisco Bay Area, I'm John Negroni, film editor for InBetweenDrafts.com. And from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, he's a freelance film writer, and he's your friendly neighborhood Will Ashton.
Hey, what up? I like this idea of, much like there's a multiverse with Spider-Man and other Marvel characters, there's a multiverse out there where Aunt Ogre, Tilt's Ogre, is just still kind of happening. I'll bet... interlocked with Cinemaholics. It makes me feel better about the state of the podcast industry and my friends.
Whoa, speaking of friends, Will, you should introduce our two guests because, you know, they're your old co-hosts.
That's true, yeah. I mean, I'd be surprised at this point if you've been listening this far if you don't know who our guests are, but nevertheless, you hopefully know my two friends here. It's Matt Serafini and Chris Sheridan, my four co-hosts on Aunt Ogre, Tilt's Ogre.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
How are y'all doing?
Good. Glad to be here.
Pretty good.
Now, Will, when you came to me and you were like, well, if we're talking about Madam Web, well, actually, no, originally you were like, oh, John, you're not going to watch Madam Web because you missed your screening. So you asked Chris and Matt to kind of come in and save the day.
Yeah, I mean, much like the web that Madam Web connects everything with, I knew that, you know, it was a given that I had to reach out to Matt because he's our resident Spider-Man expert, and he would be able to make at least some sense of whatever the hell this movie is. Because I don't even really know who Madam Web really is outside of this movie. Like, I have a vague idea.
I'll clear it all up. Don't worry.
All right, I figured. Great, I knew it was in good hands if Matt was with me. But then I was thinking about it, obviously, and I was like, well, if we're talking about a film that takes place in 2003... and as the sort of bizarre, nonsensical creative adaptation decisions, who better than someone who is permanently living in 2003 by rewatching The Cat in the Hat multiple times a year, like my good friend Chris Sheridan. So yeah, there you go. Yeah. So I was like, you know, it's a little bit of a perfect harmony in a way. It felt like if there was any movie outside of like a new Shrek or Puss in Boots movie to reunite the boys, it seemed like this was the one to do it.
I appreciate that the reason for bringing me on was that I'm stuck in 2003 watching Cat in the Hat and not that I would be inextricably drawn to this trash ass movie and want to talk about it.
I feel like it's got to be a little of both, but that is it's pretty funny.
So yeah, Madam Web, it is yet another kind of Spider-Man adjacent movie. So I'll try to set up the cinema side of this, and I know Matt's going to go into the lore. But for those of you who are just kind of curious, right, there's the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then there's like there are other kind of Marvel things that aren't really associated with the MCU. And this would probably take too long to describe in its entirety. But essentially, if you've watched, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Far From Home, that's a movie that is being made by Sony, but it takes place in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it has a lot of creative input from the Marvel Studios branch. But Sony has owned the rights to Spider-Man for a long time. So the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies from the early 2000s and the Andrew Garfield movies and a lot of the stuff since. So Morbius and Venom, both of the Venom movies. And those movies, ever since the MCU started doing the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies with the MCU, Sony's been like, well, we still have this property and we kind of want to flesh out our universe, but we also have this kind of weird contractual thing going on. And there's a lot of weirdness around them having Spider-Man in anything except for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So like these animated kind of Spider-Man properties. And there's more kind of in the web of all that stuff as well. Madam Web is kind of like the third of what I consider an unholy trinity And I'm not counting Venom 2 in that, but you know, the first Venom and then Morbius and then Madame Web, which are these kind of like these movies that like center on a character in the Spider-Man universe. In the case of Venom, Morbius and Madame Web, they're kind of like villainy anti-heroes, essentially, depending on whatever comic you're reading. And I know, Matt, you're going to kind of help us get, you know, acquainted with Madame. I only know Madame Web from the animated Spider-Man series from the 90s, and it's not much. But this movie stars Dakota Johnson as Madame Web. And I don't even know how to set up this movie properly. S.J. Clarkson is the director, first time directing. And we have a bunch of screenwriters here, including S.J. Clarkson, a bunch of story credits. And the cast includes Sydney Sweeney, who I think they kind of realized along the way is becoming like a bigger deal. So she's kind of featured more heavily in the marketing. Isabella Merced, I think she was the actor from the Dora movies.
Yeah,
right?
She was in Instant Family, I think.
Instant Family. Was because I don't want to get her confused. She used to go by Isabella. Well, she used to go by Isabella Moner, but then she started going by Isabella Merced. I'm not sure why. So I was like, wait, do I have that right? Because the name, you know.
Right.
But yeah, she was also in Transformers last night. Yeah.
But what was like, oh, one thing I did want to kind of stress here is that I do think part of the beauty of these post-Venom movies is that I feel like everyone, if I recall correctly, in 2018 had the idea of like, oh, making a Venom movie without Spider-Man is stupid. Like, why even do this? Like, this is Sony classically, like, you know, just gonna like get mud in their face and kind of realize they made a really dumb decision. But in spite of the quality of the film, it made like nearly $1 billion. So obviously Sony is like, oh, well, if you guys love that character, we should do all these other Spider-Man characters that aren't featuring Spider-Man.
Right. And the next one's going to be Kraven with Aaron Taylor Johnson. That's coming out later this year.
But I mean, obviously that first began with Morbius, which I still had never seen. I think just because I was kind of getting annoyed by the meme of it all. And also, I just don't like Jared Leto. It just didn't really look that interesting to me, even in a bad movie sort of way. But did you actually end up seeing Morbius?
I saw Morbius. You better believe that I saw Morbius. It was Morbin time for me in that movie theater. Yeah, the meme of it was pretty annoying, but it was the thing that made it annoying was when Sony tried to like indulge it and be like, we're in on the joke too. And everybody was like, shut up, Morbius. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah, so Morbius technically bombed twice.
Well, I think that was the one funny thing about it was Sony misreading the vibe as like, oh, people are just loving Morbius. It's going to become like a new cult film. We should put it back in theaters. And the internet, obviously being what it is, it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, you should do that. Yeah, we were going to all come out to see it. And then bombing twice. Yeah.
The other thing, too, is that like Sony didn't really do much to signal that they were in on the joke. They just re-released it in theaters. Like they should have done like
they
a TV
weird
spot.
Tweets.
Jared Leto had a script of Morbius 2, It's Morbin Time or something like that. There was a short video of him reading a script.
Yeah, the
title.
The Leto thing was really, I mean, I think it was kind of dead already, but that was like the stake in the heart, if you will, of the Morbin Time meme. But
I'm proud to say I also saw it in theaters.
Oh, perfect. Man, what a movie. What an experience. Celeste O'Connor is also in the movie from Selling the Spades. And then Tahar Rahim plays the villain, if you can call him that. He's been on some like, you know, soap operas, I think. I wasn't super familiar with him.
He was in Narcos, I think. No, the spider guy was in Narcos.
Okay, I was going to say. But then also Mike Epps, Emma Roberts, and Adam Scott, which I'll just put it out there. Like Adam Scott was like the only person in this movie who I think was like genuinely okay with being there. But anyway,
I don't know. I felt like his entire performance felt deeply ironic in a way that like,
I mean,
I don't
know
if it was intentional or if it was just kind of like
you can hear it as he reads the lines. He's just like, what am I doing here? I'll do it.
It just feel like every day he just kind of expected production to shut down and like he never expected the movie to like be made. So he's just like, yeah, of course, I'm Uncle Ben. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, he's Parker.
Right. Uh-huh. But I do got to say, I think it is fitting to bring the boys on as well, because I mean, I've mentioned this, I think, elsewhere on the show, but you talking you two to me is one of the biggest inspirations for Hey, Ogre, Totes Ogre. And that's, of course, Adam Scott's podcast with Scott Ackerman.
Turn off the dark.
Yeah, that's one of the best bits.
I actually wore my, I'm not even making that connection. I wore my Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark t-shirt to Madam Web on Sunday.
Oh, really?
When I saw it. I did.
Oh,
yes.
Boy.
That just speaks to how much you like that shirt.
It's a great shirt. It's a collector's item. I got it on Broadway when I saw the show.
Boy. So the movie basically follows Dakota Johnson as the daughter of a woman who is researching spiders. And these are spiders that maybe
finish the line
in the Amazon.
Finish the line.
I think you'll have to do it for me, Chris.
She was researching spiders in the Amazon right before she died. A line that is woefully not in the actual movie.
There are some lines that really stuck out to me that were in the movie. Like, you know, when the villain kind of wakes up, and the girl in the bed next to him is just like, oh, that must have been some nightmare. And he was just like, it was no vision or it was no nightmare. I'm going to die.
Yeah, the villain has some insanely out-of-pocket lines that I like.
I just can't wait. I mean, it's a mild spoiler, but, you know, like, obviously that whole scene's going on. And she's like, oddly very agreeable about like, uh-huh. Yeah, and then, you know, he kills her. And when I saw the movie with my roommate Jim, I was just like, because the whole scene is terribly ADR'd. So I was imagining, like,
every
Abby's,
scene
like,
with him.
That whole character.
Even the scene
that
where
whole
he's
character.
Wearing a mask and there's no, you can't see the dialogue. You could tell it's ADR.
Right.
I'll get to him later. Sorry, yeah, Will, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, as like you see like, you know, an exterior ending shot of like him looking at the dead body, I was just imagining like someone ADRing like, oh, and by the way, thank you for the sex. That was pretty cool.
That's going to be my headcanon now. So basically, Dakota Johnson plays this daughter of like the scientist in the Amazon who was researching spiders right before she died. And something about these spiders giving powers, and she dies, and she's pregnant. So she has her baby with a bunch of like Amazonian spider people. Again, this is before Spider-Man. Like, this is completely unrelated, theoretically, to Peter Parker and all of that. I mean, unless the spiders are from, like, the spiders they were experimenting on were from that place, I guess.
Not to be general, I guess, or sexist or what have you, but. I do find it fascinating. You mentioned, S.J. Clarkson directed this. It's her first film. I think he's done a lot of TV before this. But anyway, like, a woman directed this film. And it has potentially the most inaccurate pregnancy birth scene that I've ever seen in a film. Like, to the point where, like, the body is, like, I was joking, just, like, imagining, like, shploop, and it's just, like, the baby's out. Like, obviously a very fake baby doll with, like, no umbilical cord or anything. It's just, like, whoop. Hey, look at this. The baby's here. You know.
Yeah, I do not lay this film at the feet of S.J. Clarkson. You're right. It has made a bunch of great TV stuff and it shows that I've really loved. Literally directed an episode of Succession, you know? So, like, let's be real. Like, a lot of what's going on here has to be related to Sony. That's my opinion. I mean, I don't know. But anyway.
I mean, can we briefly mention the writing credits of the writers?
Yeah, so the guys who did Morbius, Matt Sazama and Burke Sharpless, also Claire Parker has a credit, which I think because, you know, Claire Parker, Peter Parker, anyway. But no, these were the guys. They made Morbius, they made Gods of Egypt, they wrote Dracula Untold, and The Last Witch Hunter.
I know you're probably being ironic or sarcastic with the Parker thing, but I do always think about how I'm like 85% sure that Mark Webb directed The Amazing Spider-Man because his last name is Webb.
Sure.
And they're just like, Webb? Spider?
500 Days of Summer.
Right. This is it.
But yeah, so basically Dakota Johnson has these weird powers, I guess. She can kind of see the future, or sometimes the future like replays or redoes itself. It doesn't really follow anything kind of consistent. It's just sort of like script logic, but essentially she sees like these three teenagers are gonna get killed by this spider dude who I forget who it was, but somebody called him Spider Spawn, which I thought was pretty great. But essentially these three teens are gonna grow up to one day become three spider women who will kill him And so Dakota Johnson takes it upon herself to like mother hen them and keep them safe. It's basically a Terminator movie. And one of the first things that people have said about this movie that has gobsmacked them, something else, is that like the trailer kind of makes it look like it's a spider people movie with like Sydney Sweeney and Isabel Merced and Celeste O'Connor being like these superhero spider people and Dakota Johnson's Madame Web being like their leader. Literally, like everything we see with them in costume is in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like it's completely deceptive. And I don't know. Like I don't know like who delivered this script and was like, here it is. I have to assume that they were given about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, like being serious, they probably had like less than a week. Like, I don't know what was going on with the production of this, but I find it fascinating.
If we really want to get like into the suspicious of it all, like there's some rumors of what the original storyline of this movie was, which causes it to make a little bit more sense. But I don't know. That's like heavy spoiler stuff. So
is this related to like why it's in 2003?
Yeah.
And okay. That's what I thought. I was just going to say, you know, thinking about what John said about like how like mother henning this film, I was like, in my mind watching this movie, I was like, finally, we got a Spider-Man movie for all the RAs that, you know, are just watching over their sorority sisters and can finally get a Spider-Man movie of their own.
Well, then didn't also Dakota Johnson, she said in like an interview, she's like, oh, there were so many rewrites, I can't even tell you what they were.
Yeah, and I think that there's also like the rumors that it was, she originally thought it was going to be like a Marvel movie, like an MCU movie, and I think, either
no doubt,
I think Sydney Sweeney, from what I can tell, also thought the same thing. Yeah,
and I think they Dakota for sure Johnson deceived. Yeah, Dakota Johnson fired her agent like a week after the first trailer dropped.
Mm-hmm.
As she should.
Her whole team, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, she's with a new firm now.
I think. I'm sorry. I was just going to say that you got to think like there's no way that she was ever passionate about this film. Like it was probably COVID. Like, you know, the future of the industry was unclear. She was obviously after 50 Shades of Grey steering more towards, you know, independent or art house kind of films. And her agent was just kind of like, look, it's a sure thing. Superhero movies are really hot right now. Just do it. And you can just whatever, you know, success this makes, you can fund that to do any number of weird projects you want. So like she was kind of just, you know, holding her nose and probably doing it. And then Lilo Lucino, the superhero bubble burst in 2023. And then here comes Madame Web, a movie that I think no one, from what I can tell, I mean, I don't want to speak for SJ Clarkson, but like, it doesn't feel like anyone involved with this film was like, this is a story that needs to be told. Everyone just kind of feels like, all right, I guess we're doing this, you know, just kind of throughout, like not dissimilar to how I feel about Scott in this film. But yeah, just this whole press tour just feels like Dakota Johnson scorching earth, just being like, look, I can't say I never wanted to do this, but like y'all can read between the lines. Like I have nothing but contempt for this movie and all the ways that you've tried to like memeify it. And I just want to make my movies with like Elaine May and stuff. I don't know why you guys are doing this to me.
I want to stress that I'm 100%, 120% on Dakota Johnson's side in all things these days, because her press tour has been cathartic, honestly, and genuinely, like, I hope she's having fun. I doubt she is, but like, it's been something else to see this happen. But yeah, it's what you're saying, Will. Basically, Sony was like, we want to do our first kind of like female-centric Marvel film, right? And so they picked Madame Web for that. I think their line of thought was like, maybe Venom was successful because it has a spidery title. And so I think that they're just, instead of picking any villain like Silver Sable or, you know, a lesser known kind of female villain, Black Cat, something like that, they were like, well, if it's kind of related to Spider-Man, people are dumb. They're just going to watch it because it's like, look, it's Ben Parker. Here's my money for the ticket. So I think that was their line of rationale or whatever.
Yeah,
they hired the Morbius guys before Morbius came out. But I mean, I think that they had to know that the writing was on the wall for that movie by then. I know that they were still flailing with like, well, Michael Keaton is in and whatever. But they hired those guys. They originally were going to have Charlize Theron or Amy Adams to do it. But then they kind of just like landed on Dakota Johnson, like, yeah, like end of 2021. So, yeah, around when the industry was still kind of like, I'm not sure what we're doing here. Like, I think Eternals was coming out around that time, maybe. But anyway, for people who don't know what Madam Web is, and they're kind of like, who am I? Matt Serafini, I mean, I feel like, could you give us a primer? Do you know what a Madam Web is?
Yeah, I can give you a little rundown. And I actually, it's really funny that they chose this character to be their first female-led movie, because Madam Web is effectively a plot device of a character. Like, she's more of a story engine than she is character. She exists basically to tell Peter Parker what is, like, going to happen to him that he needs to stop. Honestly, John, I'm glad that you are familiar with her from the animated TV show, because that's pretty much what she is in the comics as well. She's just this old psychic woman who is blind and paralyzed, and she's connected to the web of life. And she shows up in, she shows up in stories, like I said, to tell Spider-Man what he needs to know. So, like, a recent use of her that people would maybe recognize is the original Spider-Verse comic event. She, like, warns Peter, something big is coming on the web of life. You know, it's so, yeah.
Isn't she also a mutant, technically, like an X-Men mutant? Not part
I'm
of the
not
X-Men,
as sure about that. It's possible.
I thought that, but it has been a while since I was more.
There's a couple Madam Webs too, because, I mean.
Yeah, there's a DC one, isn't there?
Well, no, I mean, in Marvel, like, there's
okay.
Because eventually the original Madam Web dies, and.
Oh, no.
Then.
Because she's old.
Jennifer, I think it's Jen Walters, or no, not Jen Walters, that's the Hulk.
Julia Carpenter?
Thank you. Julia Carpenter takes over as Madam Web, and that version of the character's appearance is largely what Dakota Johnson's portrayal is based on.
So you're saying basically, like, she in the comics is like the Oracle in the Matrix sequels, just kind of like someone that Spider-Man goes to and is just like,
and kind of has like don't trust her vibes. There are a few scenes in the animated series, and I've seen them kind of like shared as memes of where he's like yelling at her very dramatically.
Stay out of my life or whatever. She is to be trusted. Like, she is right, and she is an ally. That's the other thing too. She's not an enemy of Spider-Man, really. It's just that, like, she makes him go through hard times sometimes, so he doesn't like her very much.
Yeah, he shoots the messenger a little bit. He web shoots the messenger. But she, like, I feel like, because the stuff I remember her from in the animated, she's like, Peter Parker, pick an army to fight this battle on another planet. And then he picks, like, Captain America and stuff. And then there's, like, this other thing where he's like, Peter Parker, this is Iron Man. And it's like, Madam Web is kind of like this not multiverse character, but kind of like she's like a watcher, but not the watcher, where she kind of tries to orchestrate things. So I kind of was wondering,
when they announced they were going to do Madam Web, I kind of figured, I was like, oh, okay, maybe Sony is using this as their Doctor Strange to tie all of their weird disconnected movies together.
Exactly. So I was like, is this going to be how Sony tries to bridge the gap between their Sony exclusive stuff and their other stuff? To their credit, like, I think that would have been really lame, because a lot of people are just multiversed out. And so I think it was kind of nice that they were like, forget that.
I mean, that makes a lot more sense to me, because watching the film and, like, Dakota Johnson, Madam Web is just kind of like, I can see in the future. It's like, oh, wow, like, what's going to happen? Like, well, I can only see 5 seconds into the future sometimes. I don't really control it. I was like, this power kind of sucks. it's not like a very she made it work, but, like, it's not like a very good superpower. It's just kind of like. Yeah, like, she isn't really, it doesn't feel like she has a lot of agency about it, or like a lot of control over it. So that also kind of compounds to make it a weird, like, this is our female centric, like, you know, more feminist superhero movie, when it's just like, yeah, she can, like, kind of figure out the powers. And then I feel like, I don't know, like, so much stuff I feel like happened off screen as far as, like, her ability to control this power, because, like, she spends 2/3 of the movie, like, barely being able to figure it out. And then suddenly by the last action scene, she's like a pro, like a master. I was like, how'd she like handle these powers so well? I just feel like there's a whole lot there that just got cut out.
You're also talking about the powers as if there's any consistency to what they are.
That's it.
Which I hope this movie makes people appreciate the Marvels better, because at least they had a montage.
I need to see that one still.
The powers do allow her to yell "get down" about 15 times.
No. Yes. It's weird. It's like, why did they decide it to be Terminator? I don't know. But okay, I'm going to say something nice about this movie. Here it comes. Dakota Johnson in this, at the very least, I kind of think like her as a protagonist, I kind of like how unlikable she is. Like there actually is like kind of the makings or like the loose framings of an arc there where she's kind of socially awkward. It's funny how so she's socially awkward. And there are a couple of scenes where like literally Ben Parker just being like, I met someone. She's just staring at him like she doesn't care. And I'm just like, yeah, I like her because I like how she's a bit like there's just something with her. And so that kind of kept me interested.
I mean, she is supposed to be kind of cagey, and they don't really make it subtle that like she's like a stray cat at the beginning of this movie.
A stray's got to stick together.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I thought it was like that cat could be like Catwoman, you know, like just
right.
This movie and that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I can't honestly tell if these Sony Marvel movies are filled with contempt for their audience or just like contempt stupidly naive about like what these movies should be. I think it's probably a mix of both. Like, I'm assuming like Avery Arad, I don't know if he produced this one, but like, I feel like he's just a very like sincere, but probably kind of dumb comic book fan who just like has very particular ideas about what comic book movies should be. And he's like not as keyed in as Kevin Feige. And then, you know, like Amy Pascal, who's just kind of like, look, I don't know, like people like Spider-Man. When we make those Spider-Man movies, people show up. So just do that again, you know?
I do like how socially inept that Madame Web is. Like, the child of the woman she saved from the car accident gives her this really nice crayon picture. She's like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? I don't know, dude. Put it on your fridge or whatever. And then
throw it away later? Like,
throw it away. Yeah, Adam Scott's like, just throw it away
later. The birthday scene? No notes. The baby shower.
The baby shower.
There were no
baby shower. She's
perfect.
Like, my mom died in childbirth. It's like, what of all the things you could say at a baby shower?
And like Emma Roberts' face, like right behind that Mountain Dew code red. Yes, we do have to talk about the constant references to they really want you to understand it's 2003 to like an obsessive
just in case
degree.
You forgot it's
like,
2003.
Like, look at this Beyonce album. And there were just moments where I was like, what do you want from me?
why
do you want this?
I feel
well,
like
do that right.
I feel like the movie thinks the audience is like Stephen Tobolowsky's character from Memento that just like constantly forgets what's happening and needs to emphasize in every single scene that it takes place in 2003 for some reason, which when you're watching the movie isn't really ever clear. Like, why is this need to be a period piece? Is this supposed to connect to another Spider-Man movie? If so,
well, I think it's trying to say it's a prequel to, because like Spider-Man's not alive yet, so like,
well, sure, yeah,
2020, yeah,
but it can't,
with how on the nose a lot of the 2003 jokes are, though, I'm genuinely surprised that there's no point where a character is like, you know, it has only been 2 years since 9/11.
Well, they have the poster they have the Never Forget poster. And
oh, did they? I missed that.
They in the firehouse, which makes sense.
Good.
Like, or they're not the firehouse, but like their EMTs.
In it's like in the hospital, like waiting room, like or something, in like the little eating area. But
you messed with one of us, you messed with all of us.
No, I mean, I made this joke already on Letterboxd, but I do like to imagine like the Sony boardroom meeting where they're thinking about how they can reference that 2003, and they had to come to the decision like, well, we got to make sure we reference American Idol more than 9/11, because 9/11 is going to make people sad. And it's also going
to
make you wonder.
Home to watch Idol.
Yeah.
Speaking of 9/11,
it's also going to make you wonder why the villain didn't do anything to prevent 9/11 if he had these powers. Not that I imagine he would, but like he kind of.
I don't know why he's a villain, right? Like, he murders people to get the spider and then he makes
a bunch
of money. But what else is
we don't know anything about Ezekiel Sims.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, just kind of like, I do this for my family. How is he wealthy? And then,
so if I may go into comic lore again, this time about Ezekiel. I mean, there is a lot of lore surrounding Ezekiel, but as someone who's read all of Spider-Man, this movie's portrayal of him is actually pretty spot on.
His visual like, look in the flash forward is very accurate.
Yeah, he's
more of a villain with the Spider Society, right? Like Silk and that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. He's like a prepper, and he's this weird old guy who just shows up and starts like giving guidance to Spider-Man, and then like several issues later it's revealed that he also has Spider-Man powers and he's like connected to the Web of Life. But I have to say, portraying him as a Neil Breen-esque character is like a stroke of genius.
Man. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm generally fascinated to know how many lines he had initially, because he, as we mentioned already, I'm pretty sure like 85% of his lines were ADR'd into the film.
Yeah. I think it's 100. I would be surprised if there are any lines here that is actually him. It's like,
oh, it's in the scene in the bed. You can tell because like the audio shifts, like when he's talking in bed, like you can like, it's very much like, you know, like I was in the Amazons, and then like you like hear him talk in the next moment, and it sounds like, oh, he's actually in the room talking to somebody, because it's like a little bit quieter and whispering, as if like, oh yeah, he just had sex and is just like talking to this woman he loves and not like spouting out 5,000 lines of exposition to this lady.
Well, there are the scenes where he's with Zosia Mehmet from Girls, and like literally you can tell they had to have done something, because like keeps talking off screen and then it'll just like linger on her.
Right.
And it's so awkward because you're like, oh, I know what you're doing.
I got to say real quick, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I just want to make sure I say this. Zosia Mehmet has the best job in Hollywood in this movie. She never sits up. Like, she only sits down in this whole movie and is just dictating things.
She never even has to
stand. When does she go to the bathroom?
Oh my God.
Depends.
Sorry, what were you going to say, Matt?
Well, I don't know if it's too early to talk about. I mean, we're 40 minutes into the conversation, but like the rumors of what the original plot was that seemed to make sense. Am I allowed to talk about what that is?
Oh, naturally. Or, yeah, I wouldn't.
I think
dare
we can just
stop.
Go into. I don't think we need to stop. I think we need to worry about spoilers at all.
Yeah. Do people do people need a formal review of this movie? I don't think so.
No. Yeah. So the third act of this movie, as we all know, involves Ezekiel Sims is trying to catch the Spider Girls and kill them. And also, while this is happening, we're also surrounding the birth of Spider-Man. is the holy event that it is.
Well, you know, the nativity scene.
Right. It, you know, for some reason, that's tied up in all of this. And so
my headcanon, by the way, is that, come on, guys, Ben Parker, he's really Peter's dad, isn't he? Let's read between the lines.
Yeah, he banged his sister.
No, it's
it's his sister-in-law.
Right.
Whatever.
They never show May. They never show.
Yeah, I did.
It's like I met
thoughts.
Someone. Yeah, you bet you did.
Yeah, I have plenty to say about that. Though I do want to say, I was like in my head thinking, like as a joke, like yes, like the three wise men, Sydney Sweeney, all that. But like, it seems just dumb enough, like. That was an intentional decision on their part.
When the baby's actually born, I was like half expecting to be like, he's so cute. Let's call him Spider-Man.
Right. Well, I was thinking about like, that.
Well, what are you going to name the baby? Like, oh, Richard wishes it was Richard.
Right.
I was thinking about that during the baby shower scene. Like, I was wondering if Madam Web was just like, what do you think the baby's going to be named? First name Spider, middle name Man, last name Parker.
Yeah.
That's oddly specific.
Yeah. So the rumor of what was originally supposed to be the plot, which makes a little bit more sense with what the elements of this movie include, are that Ezekiel Sims is trying to prevent Peter Parker from being born. And so it was more directly Terminator, and Dakota Johnson has to get these women who are not yet the Spider-Women to help stop him.
Which makes way more sense.
And yes. That's way more interesting a concept.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, I think both concepts suck.
fully agreed as well.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like an absolute shit movie.
Because, like, Peter Parker, it's like, stop treating it like Jesus.
He's like, not like an immortal figure. Yeah.
Right.
Like, they even butcher the great responsibility line in this, and it's just like kind of just stepping all over
when
the
you have if you accept your responsibility, you will get superpowers.
That's basically it.
Which feels like it's like they're trying not to do the exact line, but it completely mangles the intent of that sentiment.
Yeah, because like the MCU did it, like when, you know, Tom Holland's Peter Parker kind of does like a teenage paraphrase of it that actually fits his character. You're like, yeah, you know, I get the sentiment. But then, yeah, in this movie, and there's also the part where Dakota Johnson, somebody's just like, oh, but you must have responsibility or something like that. And she's just like, unless you like, I forget how she even says it, but it's like toward the end of the movie. I have to admit something, guys. I did fall asleep during this movie.
Okay. Oh,
I have to add it to my list.
How?
That's, my Letterboxd list.
It was so interesting.
It was like around the time she goes to Peru, to like Dakota Johnson does, and I was like in and out, like, and so like I kind of woke up during the finale. Literally, like a big chunk of this movie. Apparently, I just like,
I mean,
gone.
That would make, I think your a bridge version of the film would make more sense as far as how the hell she went all the way to Peru and came back in the course of like a day. I don't even know if it's been 24 hours.
By the time I woke up,
she says she's going to be gone for a week.
Right. Yeah, she's there for a week.
Yeah.
Presumably. Yeah, but, and then, but like, speaking of 9/11, how did she?
Sure, of course.
How did she fly out to Peru and back without Ezekiel Sims detecting her?
Well, she had a private plane. I mean, I'm not going to give. They do show a private plane landing in Peru. I'm not going to give this movie. Yeah, I mean,
I don't remember that part. I thought she was
Sims wasn't really looking for her, right? He was looking for the three teenagers. I don't remember her being tracked.
I guess that makes sense. But she was also wanted for kidnapping the girls.
Oh, yeah, that's worse. Yeah. You got
why, well, that's why I thought she got a private plane. Like, I mean, I'm assuming, you know, this all happened off camera, but she convinced somebody, like she bribed somebody or another to give her a private plane. Which,
I mean, who is she taking?
I mean,
I don't need this private jet action.
Come on. Yeah, I know.
This like just reminded me of one of my favorite shots of the movie, which is where they imply that nobody else is able to see Ezekiel whenever he's in his weird black Spider-Man costume. And it's like this shot of a subway station and you just see him crawling very slowly on the ceiling. And there's just like a couple people in the foreground just fully ignoring him. Well, it's such a bizarre shot.
Hey,
there's even a line of dialogue where she's like, is anybody else seeing this? So
yeah,
I don't know what the deal is with that.
Yeah.
Also,
she wanted for abduction.
I mean, speaking of getting detected, like she also pries the license plates off the taxi cab and continues to use it. Like that won't get you pulled over.
Right.
She returns to the scene of the accident.
Right.
In the taxi.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, well, for one, as far as the, what do we call it, Spawn Spider-Man thing, in my head canon, it was just like everyone was just like, hey, it's New York, you see something crazy every day, rats are eating pizza, bada bing,
you know, to Brooklyn.
Right. Yeah. Welcome to Brooklyn. But I know this is like five tangents from now, but I did want to say I was really cackling to myself as we were talking about the great power comes great responsibility line when they're like eating fortune cookies. I have to assume there was some version of this film that with great power comes great responsibility was on the fortune cookie.
100%.
But I like to imagine, wait, stop.
Don't do that.
Well, probably it was Adam Scott being like, no, that's dumb. But I like to imagine a version of this film, you know, where for some reason Dakota Johnson, Madam Web is like aware of how many Spider-Man movies there are. And like, you know, she was like, let me guess something about responsibility. And he's like, no, it says, smile more, smile frequently. You're like just some, you know, dumb thing. I don't know.
I wish Adam Scott spoke the responsibility line from Amazing Spider-Man, where it's like,
when you have power and you're being responsible for the man that you are, who could or may not be a spider. Yeah.
I've actually got it pulled up. I've got it pulled up.
There's a moment where I was kind of wondering to myself, would this have been better if they had tried to make it a prequel to Amazing Spider-Man? Like, be a little bit more direct about
it. Originally was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? That makes sense because, like, there has been, like, the talk, right, of, like, bringing Andrew Garfield back for one more. And, like, it wouldn't be in 2003 if he hasn't been born yet. It would be, like, I guess early 90s or something. But,
well, no, Tom Holland was born in 2001 or something like that.
It doesn't really add up with 2003, but I do like the idea of Adam Scott aging. I know. But I like the idea of Adam Scott aging into Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
I certainly buy that.
He says he believed that if you could.
Yeah. No.
Oh, good. I was going to do in the Sheen line where he says he believed that if you could do good things for other people, you had a moral obligation to do those things. That's what at stake here. Not a choice, responsibility. Which well I just said. Love how that line twists itself into a dang pretzel trying not to be the actual iconic line.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, obviously everyone quotes that line every day. So it has just as much sentimental value for comic book fans everywhere.
They like beat somebody on the basketball court and then they like whip out that line, you know, like, OK, we had some fun, but let me just drop this on you. Yeah, not a good movie. I didn't get to see the part where I heard the Pepsi sign falls on the villain.
Yes.
I'm very curious, like, how they defeat him in general, since, like, they don't have powers or anything except seeing
they hit him with two different vehicles and then
they blow up a fireworks
giant
factory.
Neon sign. What's that?
They blow up a fireworks factory. Yeah, so pretty much Looney Tunes logic. I wanted to talk about the Pepsi thing.
I was thirsty after
the movie. I wanted a Pepsi.
By the way, I made a point to, after the movie, I need to go to the grocery store, and I saw Pepsi, and I skirted all the way to the Coke section just to spite having paid all this money for what I feel is an egregious.
The cashier's just like, why are you flipping me off? Like, right. And you're like, it's not to you.
Right. But yeah, I do love, you know, like, there's that scene where she's underwater and the giant S comes, and I thought, like, oh, that's some super, super dumb foreshadowing for Spider-Man or something. Like, probably Amy Pascal.
Had the same thought.
Amy Pascal forgot that Spider-Man is not Superman. But then, yeah, once you see the S in the billboard or whatever, the neon sign, it's just like, oh, boy.
So Pepsi features prominently in this movie as a product. It shows up in almost every scene. During the baby shower scene, she's handed a can of Pepsi, and she's
don't drink beer, drink Pepsi.
She's holding it throughout the entire scene, and she comes very close to opening it like five times. She just runs her finger on the top of it, and I was like, "If you
not
open
even Dakota
that
Johnson wants to read
goddamn Pepsi can, I'm gonna freak out." And then at the very end, there's the big I don't want to say fight, the big thing at the end. They go to a fireworks factory, which has already been established by Mike Epps as being a very dangerous setting because it's already burned down once in this movie. And they're setting up all the fireworks and causing explosions. And then, yes, after all is said and done, Ezekiel Sims falls. He plummets from the building, and then he is crushed by the pee in Pepsi Cola.
I do think they should have pulled a page from Garfield the movie. And much like Stephen Tobolowsky, who I didn't anticipate to reference twice in this review, but
yeah, what's kind of this Tobolowsky fan?
I like in that movie, as all three of us, referring of course to Chris and Matt and myself. They have a pointed scene where Stephen Tobolowsky is like asked, like, "What would you like, steak or lasagna?" He goes, "Steak. I hate lasagna." As if to really emphasize that he's the villain of the movie. He is like the opposite. He's the anti-Garfield. I feel like this movie should have also had the villain be like, you know, just he's at a restaurant or something and be like, "Oh, I'm sorry." You know, he like orders a Coke. It's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Is Pepsi okay?" Like, "No,
if there's the hell one it
thing,
is.
Right. If there's one thing about me, you need to know is that I will never drink a Pepsi Cola." As if to really be like, "Oh, he's the villain of the movie."
Like, yes, when a sign falls at him, you can be like, "Huh, take that." And then they all go to Taco Bell and have Mountain Dew Baja Blast, which is new.
What if the death by Pepsi was what his premonition was?
That would have been better.
He finishes up with a he finishes up with a roll in the hay with the NSA lady, and then he wakes up like, oh my god, I got killed by a Pepsi sign, and she's like, excuse me. Well,
I was imagining. No, I was imagining more like after like post coitus, like she goes to the fridge to get a drink because she's probably all sweaty and hot and bothered, and she like goes and she opens a Pepsi, and he's like, no, like I'm sorry. I have a fear of Pepsi. It's going to kill me someday. And she'd be like, well, then why'd you have it in the fridge?
I just like him as a villain. What does he do?
Like, I know.
Is he like, he's evil. He murdered people in the 90s or whatever, or not the 90s, the 80s. But then he's just sort of, he owns an apartment that's expensive. And
I kind of thought it was like a Back to the Future 2 thing where like, because he can see so far into the future that, like, I don't know if he, like, abused that power to, like, know, like, you know, scores or something for, like, betting purposes and, like, somehow, like, accrued money through, like, Wall Street or something. Just
sounds cool.
Well, we didn't ever get confirmation that he has any precognitive abilities beyond just having this nightmare where he gets killed by the spider women.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Though so I do
have
to
ADR
also,
that, huh?
I do.
Or like this philanthropist, and he's like, he's kind, and he has like 20 orphans that he adopted, and he uses his independent wealth to make lives better for people. And then he has his dream. He's like, I'm going to freaking kill those girls.
I do have to say, like, obviously we mentioned he's haunted by this premonition, and the big climactic scene happens where he's like tied down by the bolts. And Dakota Johnson very dramatically says like, you don't understand. I've been your future, which makes me wonder, like, just as he's about to get crushed by the pee and Pepsi, be like, I know you're doing a metaphorical thing right now, but it was a very literal premonition. I saw very specifically these women were going to kill me. Like, I get you're trying to do a thing, but like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Right. Yeah.
As the sign is falling.
Like, I want to get what falling. I signed up for.
Like, he's falling into the water, like, I just
Well, and there's the whole other thing of, like, so we don't know how, like, I guess, like, they get their powers or they become spider people because of Madame Web, but then how would they have done that without Madame Web? And exactly like that. So, like,
I guess it's kind of like one of those things where he brought about his own undoing by trying to prevent it.
It's a web of folly.
Because if he never tried to kill the spider woman, he wouldn't have died at that fireworks factory.
You just
died
later.
The web of life.
Connects.
They're
going
to become the spider woman still because they're.
Well, it happens at that apartment. Why didn't you just move?
Yeah, why? That's I've seen that mentioned a lot of times. Like, why didn't he just move out of his place? Because that's where the death happened.
He seems to have a good bit of money.
Well, then he'd have to relocate the spider enclosure, and that sounds very expensive.
I like to imagine he's like the ultimate New Yorker and being like, what, am I going to move to New Jersey? Forget about it.
He's like,
what am I, Tony Soprano?
Except he's Peruvian.
There's also that
he's
moment.
Assimilated quite.
There's also that moment where after she says, the girls weren't your future, I am, or whatever. And then there's that really awkward crash zoom on her face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of really weird editing stuff in this movie.
The editing was so weird because like, They cut to them being in like the woods, and so you're like, is that Central Park? Like, how does that? And then you find out like 20 minutes later, it's New Jersey. You're like, well, I would have liked to have known that. Like, how did you get the taxi there? Like, what?
Where I mean, yeah, they? She just inexplicably has the taxi in the middle of the woods, and also it takes Dakota Johnson longer to get from the middle of the woods to the restaurant in the taxi than it does on foot.
At that point, also, though, when I saw that, I was just like, fine. You already got my money.
Plus, right. they leave the fire going when they go to the diner. There's a fire burning in the woods.
They like deliberately show that, and nothing comes of it.
Which I don't know if that was supposed to imply that these are just young girls that don't really think about that kind of thing or what. But I think that's a little presumptuous to think of the script of actually consciously trying to do that.
Matt, you'll appreciate this. I gotta say, the three teens, especially the whole time they're in that diner. These are Disney Channel original movie early 2000s teens. Like from the
I wouldn't even give them that much credit. They each have exactly one personality trait.
But it's like, you get what I'm saying? Where it's like, things are about to get wild in this diner. We're gonna get onto the table and start dancing.
Whoa! That's great. I don't even think there's any adults in the diner.
Like behind the counter at one point, but it's like Max Keeble's big move at one point.
Well, there is the trucker trucker that called 911 or whatever.
Yeah, there are like a handful of trucker guys.
Which why is the
but
news?
But they're like, yeah.
Why is the news? This is what 3 or 4 hours after the
he's reading a newspaper and she's already in it.
And she's already on the front page of the Daily
Bugle. Why is he reading a newspaper at night?
I was going to say, I mean, I don't know if it's fair to call it a newspaper. I'm pretty sure that was the New York Post.
I thought it was Daily Bugle. Okay.
Oh, I don't know. I was going to say, though, I have to assume that this is a flying taxi because I think, if I recall correctly, didn't Zasha Mamet, before they go in the woods, say, like, I'm going to be tracking all the bridges so I'll know, like, when they're like, she said something along the lines that she's going to track it. But there's no way she can go. They can't get out of the city to New Jersey without crossing a bridge. So, like, even if they like went through a toll booth, like when they, well, I guess if they paid cash, I don't know. I don't know how this works. It's more thought than the movie's giving.
I mean,
you're putting too much. You're giving them too much credit.
Yeah, the writers themselves would look at you right now and be like, "Stop! Like, this is it. This is enough."
They would have been I should have thought of that. Oh man,
got us, Will. I think to bring it home, no one wanted to be in this movie. Clearly, no one wanted to make this movie except for people who just had dollar signs in their eyes. And if we're kind of in this weird sort of late stage superhero fatigue era, like this is going to be one of those footnotes, quite honestly, where people are going to be like, man, there was this movie that came out in 2024 called Madam Web. It's kind of be like I've mentioned it a couple times. It'll be kind of like what Catwoman was. You know, for like the late stage, you know, 90s stuff, even though it was 2004, in terms of like, we really don't know why we want to make a superhero movie or a comic book movie, except to just make one because we just think it'll maybe make money. And it's just, I don't know, it's just sad. Like, I think the big question people are going to ask is like, can you even watch this movie in a fun way and like laugh at it? I think so. I laughed at it, but. Mm-hmm. I was more depressed about the situation than I was having fun.
I will say, I get why people are like saying, oh, this is another Batman and Robin. This is another Catwoman. But the thing about those movies is that like they make creative choices. Like they have stylistic choices. They're all, you know, I mean, you can argue about Batman and Robin and Joel Schumacher's approach or whatever, but like the filmmaker made choices. The thing about this movie is that it feels entirely beholden to the studio in a way that I feel like kind of saps whatever ironic, campy fun people want to derive from the film.
Yeah, like, I get the sense, too, that like Sony is trying to be MCU or trying to be Marvel Studios and the sense that like, well, the producers make the movie. Like, we just hire the director. Like, we'll handle everything else. And I think that it's like we're learning the wrong lesson from Marvel. And honestly, I think like Marvel's had issues with that too anyway, like in terms of too much, you know, studio, you know, creativity over like the actual artist, you know, because then when they actually do relent on that stuff, they get a Guardians of the Galaxy and then otherwise they get an Ant-Man Quantumania, if that makes sense.
Sure. I like the idea of you calling it, quote, studio, quote, creative.
Yeah, I know. It's tough, you know, it's like it's such a weird and hostile environment that a lot of the creative people involved with this stuff find themselves in. So I always kind of feel bad, but it's like they're just trying to make a buck. And I feel like it's not like they're coming to the studio asking for this or that they're, you know, who knows? Like, I think most scripts are going to be pretty rough, but it's not their job to like make it work at that stage.
By the way, what a film to debut that this is the 100th year of Columbia Pictures.
I know. Oh my god.
Was this the first one with the logo?
Yeah,
I like that logo quite a bit.
I did too. It was a good logo.
Unless was Night Swim Sony? That might have been the first one. I don't know. I didn't see that movie, but
I didn't see it either, so I wouldn't be able to tell you. This movie is bombing at the box office, big surprise. It's made $53.6 million and off of a budget of $80 million. But based on reported reshoots and not a lot of marketing, let's be real, but definitely some. The movie's probably going to really, really tank, honestly, especially domestically. So
Well, rumor has it that the budget is actually closer to $100 million.
It probably is based on when they had to, the ADR alone is at least 10. But yeah, no, I think they're going to come out with Kraven, and I feel like unless Kraven is some kind of random hit, which I don't know about that, can this stop? Can they just not do this anymore, please? They have such a good thing going with Spider-Verse. Those movies are successful. People like them. Why not just do those?
Well, we still got Venom 3 this year, which will do very well. And then that will be their indication to continue trying to do this.
I didn't even know they were doing a third Venom. I don't like any of those movies.
I will say, I don't have faith in the project, but Kraven the Hunter is directed by J.C. Chandor, who did like A Most Violent Year and some notable film. Like, it's definitely a higher grade director than these movies usually get. And it's also apparently going to be a very hard R, which is at least a little bit more interesting, but it's also like another Joker thing where it's like, why do we need to have an adult version of this thing?
You know, put just your like, respect on Andy Serkis's name.
Sure, yeah. Mm. Well, that's Venom 2, which I still maintain is better than Spider-Man No Way Home, but that's neither here nor there.
Get one of the more ridiculous things you've ever said, quite honestly.
Time will prove me right, I think. Or not. I don't know.
I do think that I am considerably concerned about like the rumors around like trying to do more No Way Home type storytelling and like bringing Toby and Andrew back for please God, no. It just feels like Sony's going to keep making these mistakes over and over again without paying consequences or without changing. And it's like, it's hard to be that mad because I'm like, well, at least sometimes they make good stuff, but I don't know. I guess it's up to, I feel like I just shouldn't watch these movies, guys. Like, why? I didn't have to watch this. Will, you
and yet
forced me.
All four of us did.
Well, I didn't force you. I just was like,
movie
hey,
end of the year.
I was just like, hey, we're doing this. Don't worry. You don't have to come on if you don't want to. And you're like, I guess I'm going to go see Madam Web.
No, my wife did suggest it. She was like, oh, you interested in seeing it? Because she knew I wasn't looking forward to it or anything. And she was like, hey, I kind of want to see it. I was like, all right, I'll go see it with you.
I like the idea of like you seeing early to be on the podcast because you said you were going to see it on Thursday and like you don't tell that to your wife. You're just kind of just like, no, let's see it Sunday. And she's just like, oh, wow, he's really excited to see Madam Web. It must be a good one.
No, it was her suggestion to see it Sunday instead because I think, yeah, just the timing of it and everything. But
Oh, it's like it felt very weird walking to the theater as a single male alone and being like, one for Madam Web, please. Like I'm some kind of Sydney Sweeney creeper or whatever.
I rolled up with a group of 9 people.
There were like 4 people, I think, in my theater total. And it was
weirdly crowded.
Yeah, mine was weirdly crowded as well.
I mean, it was an IMAX.
Yeah, I saw it in IMAX laser.
IMAX, yeah.
Seeing this movie with a crowd is pretty wild because I don't know about your audience, Matt. My audience did not react to a thing pretty much this whole movie, except for like the woman behind me who was like loudly coughing and like seemed to be having trouble breathing, but like, of course, had like 5 things of concessions. So like, you know, a joke will just fail like horribly. And you just hear.
Well, thanks to this movie, someone would know how to perform CPR on her.
I know.
Shakov's CPR session.
Yeah.
CPR lesson is just amazing.
No, that thought.
That's the stuff that'll make this a cult classic, I think.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I was thinking about that when they're like detailing CPR. It's like, well, it's a good thing I'm being taught this again because for all I know, I may need to use this.
I just like, I could see like the Jeffrey Dahmer Netflix show meme where he's like showing the TV screen of like, look at this. And it's like the CPR screen scene from Madam Web. They're switching.
If someone learned CPR from watch this movie, I can't say it's a total loss. So I guess, yeah, whatever.
I don't think they would. There was an EMT or whatever. They said, The Office has a more instructional CPR scene than Madam Web.
I saw that comment. Yeah.
That's how you know something went wrong.
And they're doing the CPR, and after about, I don't know, 7 seconds, she's like, oh, I'm getting so tired.
Yeah, I like to imagine.
To spider people, heroes eventually.
Yeah.
I like to imagine somebody, you know, trying to reassess someone to life, and it's like, One, two, three, and then eventually Sidney Sweeney's going to come to help me out. 9, 10, 11, 12, any moment now.
Okay. David Sims had a funny Letterboxd review of this. He said, every line reading feels like it's on a Zoom delay.
Yeah. Did you see Mike Flanagan's Letterboxd review?
Yes, I did. He just kind of repeated the AMC Nicole Kidman speech.
Yeah, he just posted the script from the Nicole Kidman AMC promo.
Was Dakota Johnson's mom in this played by his wife? Or who was the actress that played?
Leighton Meester from Gossip Girl.
That's who it was. Okay, never mind. Because I saw that Mike Flanagan reviewed it, and I know his wife was an actress, so I was kind of wondering, like, oh, is that why he saw this? I guess he saw it to saw it. See it.
And then Brianna said, the Sony Marvel movies are better than like 90% of the MCU by virtue of feeling like they're held together with scotch tape and pipe cleaners.
Yeah, I like that one, yeah.
Let's play the Rotten Tomatoes game. Okay, so there are 209 reviews counted. We don't have a review on In Between Drafts for this movie. I missed my screening, and I didn't have the guts to like assign it to anybody else, and no one volunteered. So,
Matt, who knows? This is your time to shine.
209 reviews. What do we think the critic score is? We'll start with Chris. Chris, what's your best guess?
It's got to be down to, I'm going to say 13% critic review.
And Matt, what's your guess?
I'm going to be a little more optimistic. I'm going to say 17.
Okay, well, we got 13 and 17. Are you going to do 15? Are you going to be that guy?
No, I'm going to go higher just to see if I can price is right it my way.
For your old pal Dakota.
Yeah. I'm going to say 25%.
Jeez, generous. Calm down.
Say, yeah. You think one in four critics like this?
Somebody liked the movie, I guess.
No, but it turns out Chris was spot on, 13%. And the score changes, like, has been changing like every day. It's fluctuating in the teens quite consistently. All right, but what about audience scores? You know, sometimes the audiences, they can be a little nicer. Hey, sometimes they can be a little meaner. 500 plus verified ratings. This time we'll start with you, Will. Your chance to redeem yourself.
Yeah, I mean, are they going to be kinder than 13%? Yes, I don't think they're, like I said, if my audience was an indication, doesn't seem like they're super into it. Was your audience into this, Matt?
Yeah, there was laughter.
Oh, really? Wow. That must have been surreal.
Well, not like they were into laughing at the movie, not.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I was laughing at the movie, but I was the only one.
I saw it in LA. We're pretty self-aware here.
Sure. I'm going to say 42%.
Okay. And this time, Matt Serafini, you go next.
37.
Okay. And Chris S.
49.
Correct answer was 56%.
Whoa.
Wait, so Chris, you said 49. I think that's closer than Matt. Will, what was yours again?
Yeah. Will said 43.
I think I was 42, actually. Yeah. So I was 42. Pretty off. So, yeah.
Chris is cleaning y'all's clocks, I hate to say.
Killing it. He's on a winning streak.
All right. And then we'll go to cinema score. This time, Matt, you go first. What do you think the cinema score is for Madam Web?
Is this the, this one's letters?
Yeah.
Like grades, yeah.
From A plus to
D.
This is the folks in Las Vegas who, for reasons unbeknownst to any of us, determine how we, the nation of the United States, feel about all
these
movies.
It makes sense, Will, because it's mostly tourists, so it's like more representative of people from across the country.
Okay, I didn't realize you were a spokesperson for CinemaScore.
We've talked about this. We've had this conversation anyway. Next is Chris Sheridan. You hold your horses,
okay,
Mr. Will.
Sorry.
C.
Okay, and then Will Ashton.
So Matt's a D, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say C minus.
Once again, Chris Sheridan, it's a C+.
Wow. Okay.
Kind of remarkably higher than I expected. And a C+ is pretty bad for a cinema score.
Chris is Madam Web. He can see the future.
Yeah. He's Ezekiel Sims. He saw this whole situation. Us all. Yeah. He woke up last night next to an NSA agent.
That wasn't a dream. It was a premonition.
It wasn't a dream. I'm going to win the Rotten Tomatoes game. All right, we'll finish off with the everyone's favorite, Letterboxd, and then that'll be that. 95,000 watches on Letterboxd, not a lot. Not a super low, but, you know, kind of middling. What do we think the average rating is on Letterboxd? And so this time, start with Will Ashton. Will Ashton, what do you got? What do you got for us?
Is it like 2.1?
2.1 is your guess. And then Chris, you're next.
2.9.
And then Matt Serif.
2.7.
Well, Chris's winning streak had to end eventually because Mr. Will Ashton, the man, the myth, it's a 1.6.
Whoa.
Which is, I think, the lowest, Will, we've ever seen.
That it has to, actually. I should have gone lower.
Yeah, I was going to say, I knew it was going to be low. I didn't realize it was going to be that low. Just
I don't know if we've ever seen it be in the ones. I think the lowest has been in like the low twos.
Well,
yeah, I thought for sure the Sydney Sweeney stands would come out in force. And
it's funny because if you look at the like the ratings and everything, you can kind of see that there's 2,849 people who gave it 5 stars, obviously shit posters. Mm-hmm. And then not a lot of people gave it 4.5 by comparison, like 493. And then it drops off and drops off. Most people gave this 1 star. So the most amount, 24% of the rating. So, which kind of tracks, I guess.
Hey.
But, yeah.
I gotta say, you know, every movie, as they say, is someone's favorite movie. Somewhere out there, maybe not alive now, maybe, you know, sometime in the future, who knows, this will be their favorite film. Why? Hell if I know. But, you know, if they love it, they love it.
Yeah.
You know, the web connects us all, so at the end of one of those strands, somebody's got to love Madam Web.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that'll do it for our show. Thanks so much for listening. Next week, we're going to be talking about Dune Part 2.
Do you think there'd ever be a podcast like Ain't Ogre and they devote a month to Madam Web, watching it once a month?
Yeah, I would pray for them, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Anyway, yeah, I'm excited for Dune Part 2.
I reviewed it for In Between Drafts. Great movie, and better than the first one, in my opinion. But we'll have a full-on conversation for that. And Matt, Chris, thanks again, guys, for coming on. It was a blast and a half. It was more fun talking to you two about Madam Web than watching Madam Web. That's for dang sure.
Thanks for having us.
Back at you. Yeah, thanks for coming. Thanks for having us. It's good to be here.